Thanks for joining A&M Conversation With, a podcast series featuring Alvarez and Marsal leaders discussing the trends impacting businesses today.
On this episode of A&M Conversation With, Managing Director David Gruber from our healthcare industry group sits down with Managing Director Stuart McLean to discuss the United States healthcare system in terms of cost, effectiveness, and the barriers to the coordinated care delivery system.
Hi, Stu, and thanks for joining us today. How would you describe the U.S. healthcare delivery system in terms of relative performance to the triple aim, efficiency, effectiveness, and the experience of care?
Dave, thanks. Always good to be working with you. Highly variable. I think as we look across the country, domestically, at healthcare, the way care is organized, the way care is delivered, and the cost, the outcomes, and the experience of that care is highly variable. I think that's a function of a number of elements, including the significant fragmentation of care that still exists nationally at the provider level. Even as much of the healthcare industry, the insurers, the pharmaceutical companies, the medical device companies, even to some extent medical education, has consolidated to a handful of dominant players, healthcare delivery at the hospital, the nursing home, the home care, the physician level is highly, highly fragmented, and today I think operates as really the largest mom-and-pop sort of business in America.
And you mentioned mom-and-pop, but there's been a lot of consolidation in terms of healthcare. And, you know, could you describe that a little bit further to us in terms of mom-and-pop? Are we getting at the fact it's fragmented, you have different mom-and-pops across different parts of healthcare, and then perhaps comment on where reimbursement is in this to the problems that we have today?
There clearly has been a wave, really, for decades now of consolidation at the provider level. That consolidation to date, however, has been driven by defensive and or profit-seeking motives. Defensive, often in the not-for-profit sector, where health systems, principally hospital-centric health systems, have consolidated as a way to protect rates and protect market position. And profit-seeking, where is more of the kind of cross-border, which is to say across multiple states, consolidation of typically small hospitals in order to achieve operational cost-based efficiencies to wring out profit. That consolidation to date hasn't been motivated by where you opened this conversation, the triple aim, and hasn't resulted in organizations generally large enough to take on those issues.
Healthcare delivery has been defined as hospital-centric. What does that mean? Is that sustainable? And if not, what has to change?
Hospital-centric in that most of the care and the spending in most communities is delivered in a hospital setting, really acute episode and procedurally oriented sort of transactions that are really focused on fixing problems rather than managing health. We think that that is ultimately not sustainable. The pathway towards a more physician and a more provider and a more technology-centric healthcare system will be a long one.
What are examples of non-hospital-centric healthcare delivery systems? You know, we hear about California, people throw out Geisinger, people throw out the Fallin Clinic and others. What is it that they have in common?
I think to your point, you're now mentioning certain regions of the country where care is more advanced and advanced measured, again, as against the triple aim, outcomes, per capita cost, utilization statistics in areas. We see areas within the country where there's been significant progress. Those areas tend to be, as you mentioned, around large consolidated multi-specialty physician practices. And those practices are enabled and supported by professional management, by information technology and analytics, and by a more thoughtful reimbursement scheme where they accept typically payment on a per capita basis or something of the like. In those models, we see a real change in the way care is delivered towards a community-based retail delivery of care with a heavier focus on longitudinal relationships with patients and the management of the measures of sort of wellness rather than kind of after the fact acute interventions.
You know, Medicare has been leading the effort in terms of payment reform, shifting from fee-for-service to value. Today in the New York Times, there was an article talking about potential rollback of some of those payment reform initiatives. Can you comment on that? What are your thoughts? How much progress has been made in that regard? And has the train left the station? You know, is it inevitable that there will be payment reform? And how important is it, you know, to hospital systems to jump on board?
This topic is very important. I think the actions that Medicare has taken over the last handful of years with regard to payment reform have really moved the entire market in that direction. Medicare really is the reimbursement market maker. They set the standard for the way physicians in hospitals are provided across all payers, both Medicare and Medicaid, but also the commercial and private payers really follow Medicare's actions. So the actions that they've taken really have created a bit of a domino wherein the commercial payers followed in that sort of transformation towards value-based payment. And that train, I think, has left the station even as Medicare considers rollbacks. The issue is that the changes to date have been on the margin. They've been focused and experimental. Bundles for hips, adjustments to payment based on readmissions. So focused and experimental, they haven't been comprehensive. So the provider community has responded to those in more of the same sort of defensive approach. The ACO rollout of several years ago prompted provider organizations to take a more offensive, a more forward-thinking approach. There were issues with the way the ACO model and the reimbursement schema were developed so that some of the most successful provider groups, the Dartmouth-Hitchcocks of the world, were actually penalized because their pre-existing performance was so good. Everything was about improvement on the margin. So therefore, that well-intended, more comprehensive approach did not really take hold, and as a function, was not met with similar action by the commercial payers.
Thanks, Stuart. And I'd like to thank you for your insightful perspective on the future of healthcare delivery.
Always good to be with you, David. Thank you.
For our listeners, for more information, visit our homepage at alvarezandmarsal.com and connect with us on LinkedIn at Alvarez and Marsal.